Good afternoon. It's good to see all of those who are willing and able to come back this afternoon to study another portion of the Word of God. The last time I spoke in the afternoon, I talked about Judges chapter 7 and 8 that covered the life of Gideon. Chapter 9 is a little different from most of the other chapters in the book of Judges in that it doesn't really cover a judge per se, but it definitely has to do with judgment. And it more or less tells the rest of the story of the family of Gideon. There are a few of us here that are probably old enough that we still remember Paul Harvey. He was a radio commentator who would tell a story, and then he would have a commercial break, and he'd always say after that, you know, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. And most of the time, the beginning of it is something that you knew about, but the last part was something probably you didn't know about the person that he was talking about. So in chapter 9, we're going to see that it deals with the sons of Gideon and not so much the next judge that's going to rule over Israel, but how they tried to install a king and how that did not go well for them at all. I'd like to begin the study tonight by actually reading the last couple of verses of chapter 8 of Judges. We're going to begin reading in there in verse 29. And it mentions here Jerubbaal several times. Jerubbaal is another name for Gideon. And Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house. And Gideon had 70 sons of his body begotten, for he had many wives. And his concubine that was in Shechem, she also bare him a son, whose name was called Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age, and he was buried in the sepulcher of Joash's father in Ophrah of the Abizarites. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went a-whoring after Balaam, and made Baal-berith their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of their enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had showed unto Israel. So, as we studied about last time, we see that Gideon fought against the Midianites, and he released the Israelites from their domination and their dominion. And as soon as Gideon draws his last breath, we see the Jews turn their back on God once again and go about after strange gods, which was the pattern that they would follow again and again throughout the narrative of the Old Testament. So in the beginning of verse 9, we're going to see what happened, as we mentioned, the rest of the story, or what happened concerning all these sons that Gideon had, 70 sons, 71 actually, counting Abimelech. So again, the book of Judges, in chapter 9, we'll begin reading with verse 1. And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren, and communed with them, and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether it is better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. Now, I'll stop here for just a second to kind of remind you of something that happened back after Gideon defeated the Midianites. They tried to make Gideon king, and he didn't want to be the king. He said that was not something for him to do. And so many times the Jews wanted somebody to rule over them, but they would like always pick the wrong person, it seemed. And even when God chose a person for them, they didn't want to pay attention to them. So it's like they wanted to be led, but at the same time they didn't. And it's kind of a strange position for them to have, but this is what led them astray and away from God so many times, was counting on somebody else to lead them instead of knowing themselves what's right and wrong and what they needed to do. They were constantly looking for someone else to shoulder that responsibility. So we'll continue reading in verse 3. And his mother's brethren spake of him in the ears of all the men of Shechem all these words, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, He is our brother. And it gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophir, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone. Notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Milo, and went and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. So Abimelech takes it upon himself to decide that he wants to be a king of Israel. Now, this is before, a long time before the Jews would cry out to God for a king, and God would make Saul the first king of Israel. But at this time, they're already have this idea in their head that they want a king like everybody else has a king. And so Abimelech takes it upon himself. He decides he wants to be king, and so there's no contention about that. Since they had offered to make Gideon the king, he goes and kills all of his half-brothers so that nobody can kind of stand in his way there of being king. And he's able to kill 69 of his half-brothers. Only Jotham, who was the youngest of Gideon's children that lived at Ophrah, was able to escape from being murdered because he hid. It also mentions here that Abimelech was given money that came from the temple of Baal-berith. This is one of the pagan gods that the Jews were inclined to worship at this time. And so they took money out of the treasury of that temple to that false god and gave it to Abimelech to try to kind of fund his campaign to become a king. And he hired some people who were vain and light persons. And this pretty much means that these were kind of like people that were kind of reprobate. They were kind of hangers-on and people who would pretty much do whatever Abimelech told them to and try to prop him up. And like we see so many times throughout history, how people that desire power will surround themselves with people that will help them to that end that aren't necessarily the best kind of people to be associated with. So all of this is again going contrary to what God would have them to do and the way that he would have them to live, because they're looking for somebody to lead them, and they're looking for somebody who was willing to get that position by murdering his brothers. And of course, that's never a good thing either. We'll continue reading Judges in chapter 9 and continuing in verse 7. And when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice and cried and said unto them, "Hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them. And they said unto the olive tree, Reign thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, Should I leave my fatness wherewith by me they honor God and man and go to be promoted over the trees? And a tree said to the fig tree, Come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said the trees unto the vine, Come thou and reign over us. And the vine said unto them, Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, In a truth ye anoint me king over you. Then come and put your trust in my shadow. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now therefore, if ye have done truly and sincerely, in that ye have made Abimelech king, and if ye have dwelt well with Jerubbaal in his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands, for my father fought for you and adventured his life far and delivered you out of the hand of Midian, and ye are risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons, 70 persons, upon one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If ye then have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech, and devour the men of Shechem and the house of Milo. And let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Milo and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother. So Jotham here gives them kind of a fable or a parable to help them understand what it is that they've done is they've taken someone who is low and base and someone who is desiring to be their king, and they've elevated him to that position when he doesn't really deserve it, and when there was other people that, if they needed a king, would have been more able to handle that. The trees that he talks about here, the olive tree was the most profitable tree to in that region to its owner. There were few trees at that time that you could get more benefit from the olives themselves and the olive oil. And this was used for many medicinal purposes, as well as in medicine. The fig tree, the fig is one of the sweetest, has one of the sweetest fruits in that region, and was much desired. And the vine obviously made grapes. It says here that when he talks about the grapevine, he said, "Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man?" In the King James translation of the Bible, God is capitalized there, but it's more likely that that should be God with a lowercase g, meaning the pagan gods, because they were the ones who were worshipped through the consumption of wine and the different pagan rituals, and not the one true God wouldn't be cheered by wine. So that's, if kind of make a mental note of that when you read that chapter, that that's one place where the King James is not quite accurate in what it's trying to tell us there. That should be God with a lower G. And so the vine has, as we mentioned, it gives forth grape juice, and of course that was used for a food source when in its unfermented state, and of course people partook of it as in a fermented state as well. The bramble or the thorns was kind of the lowliest of the plants. It's more or less like a hedge that they would use to put around fields to keep animals from coming in and eating the crops and things of this nature. But in this parable or fable that Jotham gives them, it's like they're willing to give the highest position in the land to the lowest form of person that's in there. And of course, as we've mentioned throughout history, we've seen where people have entrusted leadership to those who had nefarious means and weren't really sincere about their idea of leading the people in a way that was profitable to all of them. And the idea of somebody that would want that kind of power in the first place is kind of a weird thing to look at. One of the things I got to thinking about was in our own country, if you ever look at pictures of our past presidents, the pictures of them when they first became president, and then especially like some of the guys that served 8 years as president, you look at them when they began their presidency and when they end, it looks like they aged 20 to 30 years within those 8 years, because that's being president of the United States is an awesome responsibility, and one that it comes with the weight of leadership and having to make decisions and having to make put things in action that could harm or kill other people or hurt other people. It's just something that would be very weighing on your back and age you before your time, as it's plain to see from photographs of these men. And so the idea of somebody wanting that kind of power, you always have to question what are their motives? Why would they want to do that? And of course, in the case of Abimelech, he wanted power and he wanted to be over other people. And the fact that he was willing to do these horrible things to gain that position and to keep it were clear signs that he was not the leader that anyone should want or need. We'll continue reading in verse 22 of chapter 9. When Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dwelt treacherously with Abimelech, that the cruelty done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid upon Abimelech their brother, which slew them, and upon the men of Shechem, which aided him in the killing of his brethren. And the men of Shechem set liers in wait for him in the top of the mountains, and they robbed all that came along that way by them. And it was told Abimelech, and Gaal the son of Ebed came with his brethren and went over to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. And they went out into the fields and gathered their vineyards and trod the grapes and made merry, and went into the house of their God and did eat and drink and cursed Abimelech. And Gaal the son of Ebed said, Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is not he the son of Jerubbaal and Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for why should we serve him? And would to God this people were under my hand, then would I remove Abimelech. And he said to Abimelech, Increase thine army and come out. And when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled. He sent messengers unto Abimelech privily, saying, Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brethren be come to Shechem, and behold, they fortify the city against thee. So here we see this man, Gaal, and some of his people come in to Shechem, and they're more or less going to challenge Abimelech. They see that he's not a good leader and that many of the people are unhappy with him, and so they try to encourage the people that are in that city to rebel against Abimelech. And he more or less throws down a challenge to him to fight him for the leadership. We often use the phrase today, what goes around comes around, and we realize that this is what's happening now to Abimelech, just as Jotham had said it would. He's going to face the same kind of treachery and betrayal that he used to gain his position. It's going to now be used against him on behalf of those that he killed. We'll continue reading in verse 32. Now therefore, up by night, thou and the people that is with thee, and lie in wait in the field, and it shall be that in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, thou shalt rise early and set upon the city. And behold, when he and the people that is with him come out against thee, then mayest thou do to them as thou shalt find occasion. And Abimelech rose up, and all the people that were with him by night, and they laid wait against Shechem in four companies. And Gaal the son of Ebed went out and stood in the entering of the gate of the city. And Abimelech rose up, and the people that were with him from lying in wait. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, Behold, there come people down from the top of the mountains. And Zebul said unto him, Thou seest the shadow of the mountains as if it were men. And Gaal spake again and said, See, there come people down by the middle of the land, and another company come along by the plain of Minoim. Then said Zebul unto him, Where is now thy mouth wherewith thou saidest, Who is Abimelech, that we should serve him? Is not this the people that thou hast despised? Go out, I pray, now, and fight with them. And Gaal went out before the men of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many were overthrown and wounded, even under the entering of the gate. And Abimelech dwelt at Arumah, and Zebul thrust out Gaal and his brethren, that they should not dwell in Shechem. Despite being a bad leader and an overall bad person here, we see that Abimelech was still able to squash this rebellion that was led by Gaal, and he was able to defeat these people and to chase them out of Shechem. But his the people that were going to confront him, that would not end, as we see as we continue in verse 42. And it came to pass on a morrow that the people went out into the field, and they told Abimelech. And he took the people and divided them into three companies and laid wait in the field and looked, and behold, the people were come forth out of the city. And he rose up against them and smote them. And Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood in the entering of the gate of the city. And the two other companies ran upon all the people that were in the fields and slew them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. And he took the city and slew the people that was therein and beat down the city and sowed it with salt. Sometimes I think, at least for me, sometimes it's hard to understand why things are allowed to happen the way that they are, why people who are bad rulers, and we've seen this throughout the history of mankind, we've seen where people get in a position of power and they lead people in a dangerous way, in a hateful way, and yet they're able to accomplish certain things before they're eventually defeated. And that's what we see in the case of Abimelech here. His the bad things that he did continue to be mounted against him here. And so he kills all these people, and it said he sowed the city with salt. This was a practice that was used to indicate the idea of desolation or abhorrence. In other words, they would go in and destroy a city, and they would throw salt everywhere showing that they, it's like they considered that place useless, because salt is used to flavor food, but if you ever had food that's had too much salt put in it, you realize how it can, too much salt can ruin a dish of food. And certainly that was the indication here, was the salt was showed the idea that a place was ruined, more or less. And this is a practice that has been carried out in various cultures, even into the 1500s, when it was a fairly common practice in France. And it's often indicates the idea of someone who is a traitor. If someone is considered guilty of treason, oftentimes, as happened in France in the 1500s, they would go in and they would destroy this person's home. They'd tear it down, and then they would cover it with salt to show the disrespect that they had for this person who became a traitor to their country. Continuing in verse 46. And when all the men of the tower of Shechem heard that, they entered into a hold of the house of the god Berith. And it was told Abimelech that all the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech gat him up to Mount Zalman, he and all the people that were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bow from the trees and took it and laid it on his shoulder and said unto the people that were with him, "What ye have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done." And all the people likewise cut down every man his bow and followed Abimelech and put them into the hold and set the hold on fire upon them, so that all the men of the tower of Shechem died also, about 1,000 men and women. So these people that were fighting against Abimelech, when they saw that they were going to have trouble defeating him, they decided to take refuge in this pagan temple, and they were kind of locked in there. So Abimelech decides the best way to deal with them is just to set the temple on fire and burn it down. Now, these people worship these pagan gods, and you'd think that they would have some kind of problem or question about burning down this temple, but they were so set on destroying these people that they were willing to overlook that aspect of what they were doing to try to kill Abimelech's enemies. And so we see that he was not only content in defeating his enemies, but he wished to annihilate them as well. Continuing in verse 50. Then went Abimelech to Thebes and encamped against Thebes and took it. But there was a strong tower within the city, and thither fled all the men and women, and all of they of the city, and shut it to them, and gat them up to the top of the tower. And Abimelech came into the tower and fought against it, and went hard under the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman cast a piece of millstone upon Abimelech's head, and all to break his skull. Then he called hastily unto the young man, his armor-bearer, and said unto him, "Draw thy sword and slay me, that men may not say, that men say not of me, a woman slew him." And his young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed every man unto his place. Thus God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father in slaying his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render unto their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal. So here Abimelech decides he's going to take on another city, and he intends to burn down this tower with all the people in it, just like he had that pagan temple. But obviously these people must have heard of what had happened in this other town, and fortified this tower with weapons of some kind, and there was no reason for part of a millstone to be in a tower. A millstone was the large stone that they used to grind the wheat or the barley or whatever grain it was that they had harvested into flour. And so there's no reason for a piece of millstone to be in that tower, and there's no reason that somebody fearing for their life would grab that out of their house and run to safety with it. It had no real value. So obviously they had prepared, and they knew they were going to retreat to that tower and be ready to fight in some fashion. So this woman was able to cast down this stone and hit Abimelech in the head, and his pride would not let him die by being injured by a woman. So he told his in England, they called the knights called their assistants or whatnot squires or and whatnot, but this his armor bearer, he told him to take a sword and kill him, so that it couldn't be said of him that he died by being wounded by woman. So even in the last moments of his life, his vanity wouldn't allow him to be looked upon in a way that he thought was negative, even though after all the things that he had done, that he would be remembered for negatively. He didn't want to be remembered for being slain by this woman. And then at the end of the chapter, we're reminded that this is the very thing that Jotham had said was going to happen, that Abimelech would go against Shechem and Shechem would go against him, and that his desire to reign would eventually be destroyed, and that he would be he would receive the reward for what he had done to his the evil that he had done to his brothers. So even though Jotham, we see in this particular chapter, was not called a judge in this writing, he did act on behalf of God in that he pronounced this indictment, so to speak, against Abimelech, that he would have to pay for what he had done. And so this concludes the story of Gideon and his family. As we'll see in the next chapter, we're going to pick up there with another person that God appoints to be a judge over Israel at that time. And of course, as we mentioned before, this is a book that's full of some rather strange things compared to most of what the other things we read in the Bible, but we understand that God has given us all this inspired scripture for us to learn from. And as strange and as different as it might seem, there are important things that we can glean from it. And as we see in this chapter, there's places in the world that aren't much different really than Shechem was at that time, with leaders who are going about doing things that are negative and that only enrich themselves and don't help any of the people that they're supposed to lead. So this is something that obviously is not going to change as long as man is upon the earth. And that's why it's so important for us to remember to be thankful for being able to live in a place where we're not oppressed in that nature. And if we find ourselves in that situation, that we remember to pray that God will help us endure that situation. We never want to end a lesson or end a service without offering an invitation to those who desire the services of the church. Won't you come while we stand and sing?